And welcome to another episode of the Black and White Thinking Podcast. You are joined by Chick and G.
Hello.
Hiya, how are you doing?
10 out of 10.
We were just talking about this because I didn't realise you were in a bad mood today. I'm really not great.
I don't know. Bad mood implies angry, really, doesn't it?
I guess so. I'm not angry. I'm just, well, to be fair, it depends what time of day you find me at. Or what message I read.
Which stereotype do you listen to?
Oh, Oh, you're wild. Well, so what's wrong with you?
Don't know. Just one of those days, I guess.
Weather?
Yeah, probably a mixture of things.
And I've been sat upstairs all day, so I think you've just missed me, to be fair.
That's it.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Right, what are we talking about this week?
Ireland. United or not?
Oh, deep one there.
Well, I mean, you also originate from a place that was once colonised and then freed.
Yep.
So
that's very true. So for those people that know nothing about the Troubles, it's not even the Troubles, because it started hundreds of years ago.
Like 300 years ago.
Do you want to give us a little quick synopsis of the history of the island of Ireland?
Well, interestingly, Ulster, the northern counties / province, was the most Gaelic.
Really?
Going back to that time. The colonisation of Ireland by England, King James VI of England and James I of Scotland, which is one man, by the way, not two.
I know that. I'm not that bad.
Decided to colonise Ireland. I guess it was that they saw it as uncivilised, and he felt it was their job to civilise the Irish, which I guess set the precedent for England going forward, didn't it? I think then some of the settlers were sent over from the south of Scotland and the north of England.
Mm-hmm.
Planters, I believe they were known. It was the Plantation of Ulster, it was called. It had already happened in the southern counties and decided, I think, earlier. And then around about the 1600s, decided to colonise Ulster and sent over English and Scottish people. But they had to be English-speaking and Protestant to colonise the area, which then led to sort of an enclave of people who were Protestant and wanted to maintain ties with the mainland, England, Britain, whatever, and have a united kingdom. So that's really where you go back the hundreds of years, where the settling of the English and some Scottish Protestants, Unionists, started in Ireland. But then I suppose fast forward 300-400 years to, well, there was all sorts of wars went on about this and so on and so forth.
So where does King Billy come into this?
Well, the Battle of the Boyne was in the late 1600s, 1690, which I believe was to do with stopping the spread of Catholicism in Ireland. But that's kind of a minor detail in the whole. Well, for some it isn't.
Well, that's my point.
It was a battle that happened where Prince William of Orange, to give him his full title.
Who wasn't even English.
Dutch fought a battle in Ireland to stop the spread of Catholicism, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, moving on from that to get to where we are. Ireland was officially partitioned on the 3rd of May 1921. Prior to that, there were various wars that went on. Then there was a war, I think, that went on around that time in the 1920s, which then led to the Anglo-Irish Treaty, which officially separated them and set up the Irish Free State, as it was called, later known as the Republic of Ireland.
Yeah.
So, and the two governments actually didn't meet for another, officially, for another 40 years. they didn't meet again. The two heads of state until like the 1940s.
Mm.
And it really, like, you can sort of trace it all back to those days in the 1600s, where, you know, the centre were the English and Scottish Protestants to settle in what was previously the most Gaelic, considered the most Gaelic part of the island.
Yeah.
Which then led to people known as Unionist Loyalists in the sort of province of Ulster, who wanted to retain the union with Britain.
Mm.
And fast forward in another 40 odd years from that, off the back of, well, I suppose a bit more background in that, Unionist governments at the time were seen to be discriminating against nationalists.
Yeah.
And then not the nationalist community, again, who were not all Catholic. I mean, probably primarily were, but I imagine there were people from all backgrounds in the country who were involved in the civil rights movement. It probably was primarily nationalists, but nationalist has become a byword for Catholic in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not seen as union. Well, it is seen as unionists and nationalists. It's Catholics and Protestants.
But yeah, that's people who have delved into it and understand it a bit more. But recently I heard a guy on YouTube talking about the Protestant and Catholic issue here, when first and foremost it's a political issue. So anyway, the Unionist governments at the time were seen to discriminate against the Catholic community / nationalist community in Northern Ireland, and it did happen. You know, there were housed in areas that had no amenities or worse amenities than their Unionist counterparts, and you know, all sorts of things were done. You know, access to jobs and, you know, and it did happen. There's no denying it happened. And therefore, then a civil rights movement was born here. And certain events off the back of the civil rights movement, namely, I guess, Bloody Sunday, where British security forces opened fire on civil rights protesters and killed a number of them, which then led to what's commonly known as the Troubles in Northern Ireland, which for 30 years ravaged the place. And even after, I guess.
Your people still live with the effects of that now?
Oh, yeah. So
you being one of them?
1997, the Good Friday Agreement was signed, which essentially halted all that fighting. And political prisoners on both sides were released, which was a total nonsense to me. Like,
but it was the whole, like, let's, obviously
it
without
about peace. But you,
in inverted commas, if you're listening,
ultimately let out criminals
on both sides
into their back into the communities to, you know, hold a sword over the places, the communities they lived, and you know, settle into a life of organized crime. And you still see it, you know, they still hold sway over communities, and I suppose you could argue that here the police, to some degree, let some of it go on undisturbed because it saves them doing a job. You know, they police their own communities to a degree, and the police, from my experience, are happy enough for that. And I guess, what are we now, 2024? So that's almost 30 years after the Good Friday Agreement. Are we much better off?
Good question. Depends who you ask.
In some ways, yes. In a lot of ways, no.
So, obviously, this has just been a very quick synopsis of hundreds of years of, I know, for those people watching, because all I'm going to say is, before anyone says anything, do your own research before you try and say anything about, especially to us, because this is just, there's no way we can go through absolutely everything, and this is just based off of our lives and our opinions. And the fact, for me, the reason why I'd say, have things gotten better? Well, yeah, because I can live here in peace. But not everyone that looks like me can say the same thing, because for you growing up, how many black people or of any other ethnicity, colour, did you see growing up?
In the small town I lived in, County Down, I remember it was like one family, and the dad was black, so they were mixed race kids. But I remember
And you're 3.
fifth, I was about 15 when I saw a new one. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was remarkable to the point of like, no way.
But everyone I get close to here and talk to, because what I also find sad is that a lot of people are scared to say something because they think it's going to be wrong. But when I do get talking to people about their experience of in like getting to know other races, because for me, I talk about yes, me and my brother, primary school, we were the only black kids. But when we went to a Catholic secondary school, and we mixed with Asians, blacks, whites, Chinese, Muslims, like different everything.
Well, there was always, I mean, I get maybe going back around about the 50s, there was always a big population, not big, but relatively speaking, of Chinese and Italians in Northern
Oh, I didn't know Italians.
Ireland. Because there's like little cafes. There's one in Newtownards. Cofola's was set up by an Italian family.
As if.
And then there's the ice cream shop in Bangor was set up by an Italian family,
Didn't know
Brownies.
that. That's cool.
I mean, I guess having different ports and things, there's always been an immigrant community that's come and gone from Northern Ireland. But I think just we are better off in that there are no army Land Rovers full of soldiers lying in the streets and checkpoints and, people used to get searched going into shops, searched coming out of shops. That reign of terror doesn't exist anymore so overtly, I would say, but there's still some parts of it that we still have to live with, and that there were people who, I guess, terrorized communities with that sort of threat of violence, which ideally we wouldn't have. I mean, I suppose that exists everywhere in some way or another. I think we're a lot better off, but there are certain things like our police force is the only one where they routinely carry guns in the UK. Police officers have to check their car every morning for bombs, which my dad did. So there are certain things where, yes, we have peace. However, how much of it is a piece where policemen have to carry a gun and check the car for bombs or devices every morning? Kids still can't, if their parents work in the police, they still can't talk about it. Like, I heard a documentary a while ago on Radio 4, where this woman sort of got comfortable and her daughter then started talking about how her mum was in the police and she got a phone call saying, "You need to move house. There's a threat out
Jeez.
against you." And that was, she was one of the ones, the first ones to join the newly formed PSNI. So part of the whole peace process was that there would be a new police force set up to represent all parts of the community, which I applied for and was accepted to, but didn't get in because they were trying to even up the number.
One of more Catholics. Actually, that's one thing that we've not talked about. Sorry, before you carry on. You were brought up what, Methodist, Presbyterian, so basically
Protestant.
Protestant, and you're really a unionist.
No.
No, sorry, a nationalist. I get confused between
Yeah.
the two. At heart, you're a nationalist. I was brought up Catholic, have a British accent, but was also colonized. So I very much also think that this is the reason that we're also having this conversation is because it's not, yes, we've got to make a decision here and there, but it's not about the fact that we're just going to automatically agree, but we've got a shared kind of history and a kind of shared understanding as well. Because especially growing up in England, we were never ever taught about Irish history. I used to come in, not in the sense of like potato famine is what everyone knows, but as most people know, like as you always talk about, you start doing the research and you're like, there was food.
Yeah.
Carry on.
Well, I guess that's an interesting point in that when I was growing up in a little red, white, and blue town, I felt like I couldn't be Irish. But then, when, like, My uncle has traced some of her family history back to County Kerry hundreds
Yeah.
of years ago.
Yeah.
So, and then even doing that, the
Oh, the
DNA
DNA thing.
thing,
Yeah.
like mostly Irish, a wee bit of
Yeah.
Scottish,
Yeah.
which would fit with the plantation of Ulster coming from, and where our family name originates is actually from parts of Scotland where the settlers would have come, like the south western portion of Scotland.
That's cool. Didn't know that.
So, but yeah, as growing up, I didn't think I could be Irish. Felt like I was British. But that, again, much like our language, is something that was imposed upon us,
Yeah.
as in the language that we speak today,
Just as it was with us.
is a language and a culture and identity that was imposed upon me.
Yeah.
But the older I've got, the like, if somebody asks me, I'll tell them I'm Irish.
Yeah.
And I'm currently in the process of trying to get an Irish passport.
Yeah.
Which, again, as a child, I wouldn't have even considered
Yeah.
because I didn't think it was a thing. And anything Irish, nationalist, United Ireland, even the music, even the traditional music,
Yeah.
was seen as other and bad.
Yeah.
But again, the older I've got, love the music, love reading into the history of it all,
Yeah.
and pre-colonization, and consider myself Irish.
Yeah. But it's funny you say it that way because we, obviously being immigrant children, we were pushed, you are British, you are English. But I was watching a video from a family friend, and she's a doctor, and she's younger than me, so she's about Malinga's age. And she was talking about how she doesn't feel like she fits into either one because you're not British enough, but then you're not Zambian enough, and I'm the same. So I've just taken that notion of, well, I am whatever I wake up feeling that day, Irish, British, Zambian person.
But I suppose all of that is, I guess, from your side, is assimilation into the society you've been placed.
You were talking about, so we were talking about my dad's birth certificate, the fact that that's around when Zambia got independence. So even the fact that generationally as well, it's not a big change, is it, in terms of how people would view themselves colonially? Because when that's indoctrinated in you that this is your, what do you call it, your religion, this is the language you speak, this is how you conduct yourself. Like that doesn't, I feel like where we moved to England, and mum and dad tried to find their way of, like you said, it's like doing things to make it easier for us to adapt. Moving here, I found a freedom because, don't get me wrong, I appreciate where I grew up. I was privileged to be able to grow up in England. But do I identify as English? And do I find that I surround myself with people who I identify as English? Not really. Because especially living here and doing a bit more of the research and just having people that understand what the Brits did around the world, because I think I can appreciate where I've grown up, but know that they did atrocious things and that we have to do better. Doesn't mean that I'm just gonna, because I've had people be like, well, why don't you just pack your bag and leave? And it's like, well, I've moved once. That costs a lot of money.
It doesn't matter where you go, though. That's such a stupid thing to say.
It's not exactly, it's not simple as that.
I guess if you look at every nation that's ever been formed, at some point or other, they'll have done some sort of madness, because
Yeah.
that's what people do when they get power,
Yeah, that's true.
especially unregulated power, like a monarchy, for example. But yeah, I mean, I suppose having that Britishness imposed upon me, and I guess plenty of others do, plenty of others probably don't ever get to a point where they question it, because it's just so ingrained in where they
Yeah.
live and who they are, and it's part of their identity, which is fair enough. However, I've come to a point over the course of my life where I would personally prefer to not be governed by the British. Because, let's face it, all they've ever done is really show that they don't care about Northern Ireland. And all we've ever really been in this part of the world is a way of securing government for one party or another.
Yeah, I agree.
More recently, the Conservatives, Tories. And once they get their way...
Forget about us?
It was just a means to an end. And they have never shown that they genuinely care. So I personally, in my heart, feel that it would be nicer to be governed by our own people. Now, what that looks like, I don't know. And I've seen recently reports on how much it's going to cost. Some between 8 billion and 20 billion a year to have a united Ireland.
Really?
I couldn't be bothered reading the article because I felt like it was just a way of saying, well, don't do it then.
Yeah.
It's going to cost too much, well, don't do it then. But what does it cost already?
Yeah, exactly. Because let's look at some of the issues at the moment. Speaking from, I own a business. Dad works in a business that is all around Europe and around the world. You work for a local government agency. And even just looking at those three things, Brexit has massively scuppered and just messed up a lot of things that, I'm not saying it was running smoothly before, but my experience of living here has been, all right, pandemic, great example. I've paid taxes since I was, 15 and started my business. And yet, because I worked whilst I had a business, when I had nothing and just the business and then was going through all that, I got no government help whatsoever. So I was like, okay, what's the point there? You look at Brexit. When I moved here, I was like, why is it that next day delivery here is technically 2 days? You go to order something, apart from Amazon, most things, but even then Brexit's messed that up because there are loads of things you can't even get ordered because other companies already look at this place as an other. Even though it's part of the UK, it's already other. So for me, in terms of logistics, the way that everything's run, we've technically been pushed already to be a united island. So when I look at it from not even just looking at where I want us to be in the future with our kids and how to bring them up, when you look at it in terms of just us sorting ourselves out, it would make more sense.
Yeah, I mean, very just big picture, it would just be nicer to be governed by ourselves rather than some posh guy in England.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it doesn't matter who you get.
Yeah.
Whatever side of the house they're on, they're just another posh guy in England.
Yeah.
Who really has no genuine care for this island.
Yeah.
Because they're not of it. And they don't, you know, I suppose they have to keep their constituents on the mainland happy first and foremost.
Yeah.
So, this here really moved the needle only because you'll get politicians here voted in who will then prop up Tory governments.
Yeah.
But other than that, like that article I saw about how much it would cost, I feel like that's scaremongering and that, oh, it'll be so expensive, don't do it.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's already expensive to run a country anyway, so.
Yeah. Boris talked about saving the NHS, however, hundreds of millions.
Yeah.
Where's all that? Again, it's just
all his friends.
Yeah.
And I feel like if we were united, there would be a bigger pool of politicians, I guess, rather than the morons that we get up here.
Well, the fact is that it's mostly a two-party system. You have to vote. Like, what I find annoying is you have to vote tactically.
Yeah.
You don't vote based off of what someone is planning to do for your area, for your country.
People in Northern Ireland have for a long time not voted on policy.
Which is, for me outside of moving in, I found all that crazy.
I guess a lot of voting is done not based on policy of people will vote who they've always voted for. They'll look at the sort of, I guess, the guiding principles of a party, i.e., you know, Labour, left-wing, socialist, or conservative, you know, right-wing, posh guys.
Yeah.
And here, people have voted based on where they live.
Yeah.
Historically, I guess that's changing now with a younger generation of people coming up who will vote on policy.
Because everyone's so fed up of
the status quo.
We've not had a government for how many years? They came back for a little bit. Like, it's just, it's those little things that you look at and you go, how can you expect people to trust what you're saying when you are proving time and time again that you don't care?
Yeah.
And that's what makes it a no-brainer for United Ireland, because the people that are in power that don't care and have shown they don't care are the ones that are buddying up with the posh people in London that we know don't care. So it's very obvious that you're out for yourselves. The rest of us are going to be left to our own devices. Because I look at how, like, I run the business, and because of what I've been through, and I'll go, how can I make sure that as a family we're not going to be negatively affected if something happens? Because you can't even look at the people that you put in power to make sure that the right things will be put in place just in case. Do you know what I mean?
Mm. I mean, at a very basic level, I guess people deserve the right to self-determination, i.e. to look after their own interests.
Yeah.
You know, from within, if you like.
Mm.
Whereas that currently doesn't happen for us because we have a Tory government largely determining things that affect Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
Which for me is the driving factor behind why I would rather have a united Ireland governed by Irish people, democratically elected, that has nothing to do with England.
Yeah.
And I guess time will tell. I mean, the new leader of, was he voter? Is he the new Taoiseach in the South?
Yeah.
He has said that it is an aspiration to unite the island, but it's not a priority. I wonder at what point it will become a priority rather than just an aspiration.
Yeah.
It's hard to know, but I feel like the tide has turned a lot from when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe somebody brought up with my background would never have come around to the notion of a united Ireland.
Yeah.
Because it just wasn't the thing.
Yeah. But you look at the, like, let's look at the current economic situation now. I always laugh because I think that we're in the best place to get some of the residual benefits of still being attached to a country in the EU, but also if there are benefits coming from the rest of the UK, those benefits as well. But it's also, it's that frustrates me, because if there was a clear, let's say United Ireland, and like you said, we were governed by our own people, the people that would be looking at, okay, how can we push our country forward to make sure that we're in the best place? Because right now, like funding from the EU, you look at the education system and the things that are available to kids. I get this is across like the whole of the UK and it's not just here. But when you look at the facts that we didn't even have a government that could say, okay, I'm going to allocate this money to children with special needs. Why was this last time they're out of, because it was the DUP, what did they say this time?
It's the same thing, Brexit.
Oh, there was Brexit, but before it was the Irish language.
Irish Language Act.
And that was, yeah. So
which historically, they all would have spoken.
Exactly.
If not for the English.
Exactly.
That's mental.
Yeah. But that's my point, as in that they would happily, for the sake of Brexit, leave us to suffer rather than going, we have children here that can't eat. We have children that can't get assistance in schools, amongst other things.
I feel like part of it is driven by the fact that if the island were united, some of them may not get voted back in and therefore are unable to line their pockets incredibly the way they do by drawing two salaries and different things and all their expenses and blah, blah, blah. I mean, they may well still get voted in the areas you know, where the constituency office is, but I don't know, I just feel like I don't know enough about the financial side of it. I feel like, as I said, whatever they say about the money, you know, I feel like if the Ireland were united, the money would come from somewhere, and how much worse off would we be, I suppose. I feel like in many ways we'd be better off, but would we be that much worse off than remaining under Tory rule?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I guess that's sort of trying to think with my head about it. With my head, I still feel like, well, why aren't we better off governed by our own people rather than some posh bloke in England?
Yeah.
Well, of course we are. But at the emotive side of that, I'm thinking with my heart, well, we had everything that we had taken away from us hundreds of years ago anyway by the English. So why would we not want to take that back?
Yeah.
As it was taken, you know, as it was our language and our culture and, you know, religious practices and everything was taken away by force.
Yeah.
And we are, you know, the legacy of that still lives on.
Mm.
Why would you not want to go back to taking back? I suppose some people probably feel like their country's being taken away from them. But when you think about it in a bigger picture, you're actually taking your country back from the people who took it away from you, who some people claim allegiance to currently.
And that's fine, you can still claim allegiance. We're in a position where I feel like you can still claim allegiance.
Well, you can still have a unionist outlook.
Yeah.
And still long for, misguidedly, in my opinion, to be part of a union. And fair enough, by political means, still fight for that in a united Ireland. However, I feel like if we do disband the United Kingdom and go back to one Ireland, it's very unlikely that the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland is ever going to exist again.
Yeah, I agree. Because let's have a look at Zambia, because everything you were saying there about like taking back your language, your own customs, all that type of stuff. So many of us have done that. And it's not even like there isn't a blueprint to go, can this work? It can work. Don't get me wrong, it's not easy. The political state of Zambia at the moment isn't the best. However, my mum and dad talk about the way that things were like back in their day when everything was starting off. Yes, people have to figure out how to live without those people ruling. But when you have people that care, like mum and dad talk about how they were the heydays. They were looked after, they were housed, there were all these things being done to make sure that they were okay. And if anything, that's one of the reasons why they decided to uproot their lives, because they were then like, well, we grew up where everything was great and things aren't starting to be great. So for their uni education, let's make sure that we've got them in a place that's going to make it easier for them. So I do also think that, yes, that there'll be arguments of who's going to do what and like what systems, because people talk about like the NHS and all that, what systems are going to be taken on. No matter what, I always feel like some of the arguments that people have, they forget that these things aren't perfect in the first place.
No. It's not going to be a cure-all, like some
exactly
sort of magic wand that immediately cures all the ills of this country.
Mm.
I just feel like at the root of it all, it would be nice to be governed by your own people
with
your own interests at the heart.
Who understands what's happened before?
You know, I suppose you can label all politicians as bad or whatever, but I just feel like, could it be any worse?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I agree.
And in that respect, then surely it can only be better than what we currently have, regardless of cost, because we're all scuppered anyway.
Yeah.
And largely because of Brexit. So surely if we leave the United Kingdom and aren't really under that whole issue of Brexit and all that crap going on, I feel like it can only be better in the short term and ultimately in the long term.
Yeah. Do you know, since Brexit, especially because I have clients in England, down south, I've noticed more and more all the logos of like the EU logos and funding that's come from the EU. And we talk about, like, we've got a family friend called Jerry, and he wrote a book, and he used to work for the, was it the UN he was?
Yeah.
Yeah. So even all of that, when you look at all of that and you go, there was a system in place beforehand that actually being a part of that, again, I'm not saying, like you're saying, it's not like it's going to solve absolutely everything, but even just looking at the levels of funding, the wider like system and community that you have in terms of the EU, again, not saying that that's perfect, but for us, is that slightly better than what we have now? Yeah. Wild.
So you can say we're united in our decision.
We are united. Look at us. Woo. So yeah, United Ireland. Woo woo. You know, it is very interesting, and the history of here is very interesting, and it'd be interesting to see how things move forward, especially because, like I was saying, it's the fact that it is multicultural here now. I guess, on my end, the more it becomes multicultural, yes, I get there are issues on that side of it with immigration, whatever, but are there also going to be people pushing for freedom because of an understanding? Do you know what I mean? Because I think that also changes things quite a lot. Society's changing. Like, it forces people to have a look at things in a different way. Because no matter what, when I first moved here, I've lived here nearly eight years. And when I first moved here, I could have gone a week without seeing another black person. And now, I was in Victoria Square from last week, and I was like, there's a black person in that shop working. Oh, there's another black person there. Like, it's still like a novelty to be like, look at us that are all moving here. But again, people move here because there's a lower cost of living. Like, there are so many benefits to having people here. So why not get the best, the brightest, again, uni is why I came here. Mm. Prestigious universities. There's so much that you can get talent that I've got a member of staff who, again, is studying international law and she's looking at moving here. Like, if the government was actually in that mindset to be like, what can we do for our country? Again, it's these simple little things where I'm like, are you being serious? Like, these things aren't even that difficult, but you're just making it harder for everyone. We looked at the visa requirements for that the government have set, and it's like they'll want someone to go into a job and you have to offer them like nearly 40 grand.
It's designed to exclude people rather than invite people.
Exactly. But then the people that we do need, the doctors, the lawyers, the people that should be paid more, it's then like, oh, but there's a caveat that those people, you can pay them, they've got to 20 grand a month versus the nearly 40 grand. A year. And we'll be fine with that. Like, crazy.
Yeah, the status quo is not working.
No, not at all.
Time for a change.
Yeah. United Ireland.
Get the Tories out.
Yeah. Perfect, right? You want to end it there?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay, we will see you guys in 2 weeks. Keep liking, subscribing, leaving comments. Do you know what? If you found this interesting, let us know. Because, to be fair, the past few ones we've done have been a little bit deep. But I'm enjoying doing some of these because on our socials, I'm starting to find conversations happening where I'm like, oh, interesting, like the bride price thing and marriage.
It was hard to condense a 400-year history, but
yeah,
I tried.
Yeah. To be fair, you explained that really well, because if that was me explaining it, I think we both knew that wouldn't have worked very well. But no, I really enjoyed that. And like I said, everyone keep liking, subscribing, commenting, and giving us ideas of other stuff that you might want to hear us talk about, because whilst we decide most of these, it's fun, and we aren't scared to have some difficult conversations. Nice. All right, see you in 2 weeks.